This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
Know that you need to glow, you need to glow, to glow, to grow. If you love to live, you live to love hot, you gotta move to the upper level. Cause when you got the glow, there is no stopping what you want to do.
Hello and welcome to the film show on KBOO. I'm SW Conser.
And I'm Jen Chavez. And today we're live in the studio for a special hour-long show about the local festivals that will be bringing global cinema to Portland this coming month.
Later in the show, we'll have some filmmakers and organizers from the Portland International Film Festival, as well as the Cascade Festival of African Films.
But first, I'm joined in the studio by David Walker, writer, filmmaker, and curator of the very first annual Portland Black Film Festival at the Hollywood Theater. David is well known as the creator of the cultural magazine Bad As Mofo and as an authority on black cinema. His festival will run for almost the entire month of February, starting next Wednesday, the 6th. We're very excited to hear all about it. So thank you for joining us, David.
Thank you for having me.
So just really quickly, before we go into the festival, I just want to ask, you've been characterized as a blaxploitation expert.
Yep.
Can you elaborate on that a little bit?
Well, with that and a dollar, I can use a payphone. I think that's how much payphones cost these days. No, I just happen to, you know, you fall into these weird things. And I was just obsessed with those movies as a kid. And in the 90s, I decided I wanted to make a documentary about them because there just wasn't a lot of information. Since then, there's been three or four documentaries made, but I actually happened to be one of the first people to do a documentary. So I spent years doing this and research and interviewing tons of people and then started writing about this and then created my own zine and then my own website and then published a couple books and sort of became the go-to guy when people have questions about blaxploitation. So, you know, it's a maybe a dubious honor, but I wear it well, so...
You do well, wear it well, and it sounds like you are more than well qualified to be the curator of this festival of black cinema. So with the array of annual film festivals in Portland every year, what are you providing with this festival that is unique or has otherwise been lacking in the local scene?
Awesome films that people want to watch. That's what has been missing, I think. Not to knock, you know... there's the, obviously, in February, we get the Portland International Film Festival and then the Cascade Festival of African Film, which I love the Cascade Festival of African Film. I like Portland International Film Festival, but they're not necessarily movies that make me, they don't necessarily always show movies that make just the regular film goer guy in me go, ooh, I want to run out and see these, you know, I want to put on a pair of pants and go across the river or whatever. And so Dan Halstead of the Hollywood Theater and I, we were talking about what we would do if we did a black film festival. We've been talking about it for several years. And I just kept saying, well, I'd like to start off the first year of just showing movies that I love to watch and that I think people love to watch. And that would sort of get people coming out, even if it's stuff that's available on Netflix or DVD or something like that, why would they want to come see this on the big screen? And we just were, well, because they're awesome movies. And that's my sort of rambling answer to that. And I really wanted to create at least one core event that was something that I'd always wanted to do. And so that's sort of what we built the festival around.
And have you ever curated a festival before?
Yes, I did. I ran the Long Vow Film Festival for 5 years, which was Willamette Week's entry into the film festival world. I also worked at Willamette Week for about 7 or 8 years. And at some point they said, well, we want to do a film festival. And I said, okay. And 1 year turned into two, which turned into three, four, and five. So, and I've also curated various film programs in the past. I've done some stuff at the Hollywood, done some stuff at the Clinton Street Theater, I think maybe three owners ago. So yeah, this is sort of, I can do this. I've done this before. And so this is a lot like, you know, going back to the job I had when I was a kid counting bottles at Fred Meyer or something like that.
Well, let's get straight to the program then.
Okay.
So let's start with the main event. Mm-hmm. Tell us about the visiting director.
this is the whole reason this festival exists. When I was running Longbow, I always wanted to do an event where I picked like two films that I really truly loved, then brought the director in, and then just had an opportunity to talk to the director. And for two or three years in a row, we had been trying to bring Larry Cohen, who directed movies like It's Alive and things like that. And I wanted to bring him, show some movies, and every year his schedule never worked out or the finances weren't there. And so when Dan and I sat down and talked about doing this festival, I said, well, I want to bring Michael Schultz, who's the director of movies like Car Wash and The Last Dragon and Crush Groove and all these movies that I grew up loving, but I've never actually met Michael Schultz. He's one of the few filmmakers I've never had a chance to interview. And so when Dan said, what's the one thing you would want to do? And I didn't even hesitate. I said, I'd want to show The Last Dragon and Crush Groove on the big screen, bring Michael Schultz in town, and then interview him. And Dan was like, okay, let's try to do this, you know, because he can get the prints. And I was like, well, if you can get prints, I can get, I'll figure out a way to get Michael Schultz. So we put that plan into motion, and then and I should mention that the Regional Arts and Culture Council was kind enough to give us a grant to partially fund this thing, which made it possible to bring Schultz to town.
Okay.
And so I actually know Michael's son, and so I contacted his son and said, hey, how do I get in touch with your dad? And he was like, okay, yeah, he might be into this. I told him what it was for. I sent him an email. And his response was one of like, I don't think people think to do this that often, to show his movies and talk to him. And what's been interesting is I know film curators in other cities who, when they found out about this event, were like, man, how'd you get Michael Schultz? You got Crush Groove? You got, you know, and Dan.
Just gotta ask.
Yeah. Dan, to his credit, got a print of The Last Dragon, a 35mm print, which, you know, in this day and age is becoming harder and harder to get. And Dan loves showing stuff in 35. And to me, again, The Last Dragon and Crush Groove were, at the risk of dating myself, were hugely instrumental in my ascension into adulthood. I saw both of those movies in high school, and they really like kind of changed my life. And at the time, I didn't know they were directed by the same guy. And when I figured out they were directed by the same guy, I figured out, oh, he directed like five other movies that had a huge impact on me. And so that's what it's all about. I mean, I love Crush Groove. I love Crush Groove. I really like The Last Dragon. So we have to sort of differentiate between the two. But
so, Crush Groove.
It's a solid film. It's because it's a solid film, and it's because it's like Crush Groove to me is sort of that and Charlie Ahern's Wild Style are the two movies that really capture like what hip hop was in its early days. And you know, so it's in a lot of ways it brings me back to the music that I was listening to, and like I admit it, some of the clothes that I wore. And that whole sort of culture that influenced me in my early adolescence. Now, like, The Last Dragon's just awesome. I mean, Shonuff is great. But that's like I could just skip to those parts with him and I'd be happy with that movie. But Crush Groove, every scene. And I rewatched it like a month ago, because after we put this whole thing together, I was like, did I make a mistake? Did I, you know, is this a movie that I've given too much credit to? And I sat down and watched it, and I was like, nope.
No, sir.
You know, that, like, just that scene when LL Cool J comes out alone is like, and I remember being in the theater. I was probably like 15 years old, and that scene and my jaw just hitting the ground, because it was like, not a lot of people knew who LL Cool J was at the time. Actually, I must have been 16, because LL Cool J and I are the same age. And so I knew who he was, because everybody was like, oh man, there's this kid, and he's 16. And then he came out in the movie, and I was just like, there he is. I can't live without my radio guy. So, yeah, I'm really excited. And then I'm also excited because Michael Schultz, and I know I'm rambling, I apologize.
It's okay. It's
like, to me, is the unsung hero of black cinema. You know, when everyone sort of talks about Spike Lee, and then they'll talk about Gordon Parks Sr., who directed Shaft and The Learning Tree. But Michael Schultz, like, came along in the scene in the early 70s, and he has – between film and television, like 80 some odd credits to his name. And when you look at like his TV credits, it's like, oh yeah, he's directed episodes of that show Arrow, which is a really big hit right now. But then in the 70s, he directed episodes of like The Rockford Files. I mean, just again, I think he was like a director on like the Gilmore Girls. I mean, it's just this weird eclectic mix. And then in terms of film, again, Car Wash, Grease Lightning, and then everybody's favorite, Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band with the Bee Gees and Peter Frampton. And like that movie, like if anyone says that movie's bad, they come down to the KBOO studios and I'll meet them outside. I got a left hook for
right,
them.
Right so. Now, folks.
Yes.
A Renaissance man, if I've ever heard
yes,
of one.
Yes, exactly.
Excited for that screening. Outside of that, as far as blaxploitation films on the lineup, why did you choose the few that you did out of the so very many that I'm sure that you have seen?
Of the hundreds?
Yeah.
Well, I will say the festival ends, I believe, with a screening of Brotherhood of Death, which was, that was Dan's movie. He was, and that's an okay movie. I'm not sure why he picked that one. I haven't seen it in years. But I know that that was a movie that influenced Tarantino with Django Unchained. That might have had something to do with it. But, you know, Dan said to me, whatever blaxploitation movie you'd like to show. And I, you know, I kind of hemmed and hawed. And then I thought, you know, Across 110th Street over the years has aged better than all those other movies. I mean, I love The Mac and I love Shaft and I love Foxy Brown. I love all those movies. I own most of them. But Across 110th Street at the end of the day is just a truly phenomenal 70s film. And it can exist both within the blaxploitation context and outside the blaxploitation context, which is very rare for a lot of movies to do. Like if I were to show somebody The Mac, I kind of have to explain to them, okay, this is the era that it came out of. This is what was going on. Same thing with a movie like Superfly. But with Across 110th Street, you could just put it in. You could show it as a double feature or something like The French Connection or Dog Day Afternoon and not explain the context, the politics, the race, anything. And you're just going to watch like a totally awesome movie. And so that was it. And I do. I honestly think that when people talk about the great movies of the 70s, you know, what do they talk about? They talk about like Mean Streets. They talk about, you know, obviously Scorsese's movies, Coppola's movies, but they never talk about this movie. And it belongs there. And that's not me being hyperbolic or overly nostalgic. It is just a movie that truly gets better. Paul Benjamin really deserved an Oscar for that movie, like Best Supporting Oscar. And Yaphet Kotto's great in it. Anthony Quinn is great in it. And I'll be talking along in that theater when we show that one. And that's a 35 millimeter print too as well. And I think Dan had said, you know, when I was trying to figure out what title to get, I said, I'd like to show Across 110th Street. And then he said, there's a 35 millimeter print. And I said, then that's what we're showing.
Score.
Yeah. So I will be that guy in the back of the theater, you know, like quoting lines
yes,
throughout the
yes.
whole movie. So
every theater needs one. So unfortunately, we're not going to have time to discuss every single the thing that we're. But I just want to point out a few before we move on. Putney Swope,
yep,
and a couple musical programs such as Soul Train with the Afro Sheen commercials included, right?
Yep.
Also Rhapsody, including Graffiti Rock, which is another favorite of mine. And it's a few older films, Nothing But a Man and Cabin in the Sky.
Nothing But a Man is arguably the might be the second greatest movie about, I would say, the black experience in America, the first being Charles Burnett's Killer of Sheep, but Nothing But a Man with Ivan Dixon, Abby Lincoln, pure brilliance, just an amazing, amazing movie.
Absolutely, and there's also going to be a short film showcase, including your film,
yes.
The Day They Ran Out of Bullets.
Yes.
Briefly, just tell us a little bit about that.
You know, I wanted to get some original programming in there, not just a retrospective thing. And I was like, well, shorts is always an easy thing to do. And I looked around and realized that there was enough filmmakers, black filmmakers in Portland, believe it or not, that we could put together an actual program of shorts. So there's myself, Chris Witherspoon, Liz Weiss, Elijah Hassan. I went to all of them and said, hey, can I show your shorts? And with Elijah, he had two new shorts that no one has seen yet. And Liz made a short called, her name was Mary, which will make everybody cry. And then I had The Day They Ran Out of Bullets, which we premiered a few months back down in Oakland. And we've shown it here once or twice, but really, it's such a diverse mix. And I think the thing that's exciting about the shorts program is none of these are films that you would necessarily expect to see come out of Portland, period, let alone then to find out, oh, okay, well, you know, these were made by Black filmmakers. And in the case of The Day They Ran Out of Bullets, Jason Lamb wrote it, Jerry Bell co-produced it, I directed it, and it's, you know, it's not like anything else anyone's seen around here. And so that was it. It was like just that opportunity to be able to go, okay, this is what we in Portland are contributing to this larger cinematic world. And the thing I keep telling, and people keep asking me this, and because it's Portland, of course, obviously, they go, well, can white people go to these things? And to which I say, yes, this is like, and if you're lucky, you'll meet some Black people and make friends. So, yeah.
Great. Well, just to close really quick, could you tell us where folks can go to get more information and to buy tickets and whether you would suggest buying tickets ahead of time?
I always think buying tickets ahead of time will be good, especially for that Michael Schultz, The Last Dragon, Crush Groove double feature. But just go to the Hollywood Theater's website, which I believe is hollywoodtheater.org, and that's theater spelled T-H-E-A-T-R-E, I think. I get confused.
I think it is R-E. I think that's the one in town that's R-E.
Yeah, I think it's R-E. So, but just type in Hollywood Theater Portland in whatever search engine. You're going to go to their website. You can get advanced tickets there. The entire schedule is up. There's some Facebook events going around for the Michael Schultz event and for the shorts program, so you can get information there. And or just call the Hollywood Theater. And I don't have their number, but they're over on Northeast Sandy Boulevard, 41st and Sandy, and just go by and, you know, just camp out all of February. That's what you could do.
Well, there you have it. Check out the Portland Black Film Festival at the Hollywood Theater starting Wednesday, February 6th. Thanks again for coming in for a festival preview, David, and we'll hope to see you at the Hollywood.
Thank you.
Tonight, the 31st, the Hollywood Theater kicks off Bollywood at the Hollywood, brought to you by KBOO's own DJ Anjali. At 7 p.m., they'll screen the cult Indian revenge film Dawn from 1978. For more info, visit hollywoodtheater.org.
From tonight through Saturday the 2nd, catch the end of the PDX African American Film Festival with screenings of narrative and documentary films pertinent to the African American community at Mission Theater and Kennedy School. This includes the Youth Film Festival from 11 to 3 on Saturday, which is free. Learn more at pdxaaff.com.
From tomorrow through Sunday the 3rd, the Northwest Film Center will be wrapping up its Jans Funkmeyer Conspirator of Pleasure series, with several remaining screenings of shorts and features by the acclaimed Czech animator. To learn more, go to nwfilm.org.
And starting tomorrow and continuing through Thursday the 7th, the Hollywood Theater will screen Oscar-nominated shorts with animated, live-action, and documentary programs. For showtimes, visit hollywoodtheater.org.
A few events coming up at the Clinton Street Theater. On Valentine's Day, February 14th, the KBOO at the Clinton series continues with a 7 p.m. screening of Rear Window. Keep an eye out for future screenings on the second Thursday of every month, listed at cstpdx.com.
On February 16th and 17th, the Clinton hosts the third annual Rose City Steampunk Film Festival, returning with short and feature-length screenings celebrating the world's finest neo-Victorian retro-futurist cinema. Showtime's at 3 p.m. More info about that at steampunkfilmfestival.com.
And on February 18th, the Clinton continues its Real Eats series with a shorts program of food-related documentaries at 7 p.m. Check in on the third Monday of each month for future screenings, again at cstpdx.com.
The Oscars are on February 24th, and several theaters around town are throwing parties. For example, you could go to the Hollywood Theater at 4:30, the Mission Street Theater or Baghdad Theater at 3, or the Academy Theater at 4. More information at hollywoodtheater.org, mcmenamins.com, and academytheaterpdx.com.
From February 24th through the 28th, Cinema 21 presents Alien Boy, the long-awaited documentary on James Chassis, directed by Brian Lindstrom. For showtimes, visit cinema21.com.
Back at the Clinton on February 27th, their Real Feminism series continues with a 7 p.m. screening of Standing on My Sister's Shoulders, a documentary about women in the civil rights movement. Stay tuned every fourth Wednesday for future screenings at cstpdx.com.
And just a reminder, Northwest Documentary's Spring 2013 workshop season is beginning this month. They'll be offering various classes on documentary production and post-production skills. To download the course catalog, go to nwdocumentary.org. And one more event. Tomorrow, February 1st, marks the opening of the Faux Museum Microcinema with a screening of Dennis Nyback's Bad Bugs Bunny program. Rare 16mm films will be shown throughout the month of February, every night except Mondays. Showtime is 7:30 p.m. and admission is $8. The Faux Museum is at 139 Northwest 2nd Avenue at Davis. For more information, go to facebook.com/FAUXREELfilms. And that's our film calendar for the month. Now back to Jen with more of the film show.
Thank you, Conch. I'm joined now in the studio by Allison Mobley and Tara Foster, organizers of the 23rd Annual Cascade Festival of African Films. The fest includes feature and documentary films from the African continent, showing Africa through African lenses. It begins tomorrow and runs through the month and into early March. Allison and Tara, thanks for joining us this morning.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thanks.
Absolutely. So you know, at first look, the tenure of the Cascade Festival is really impressive. 23 years is a long time. Can you give us a glimpse into the conception and the history of the festival up to this point?
Sure. You know, the Cascade Festival of African Films is the longest running annual African film festival in the United States.
Oh, wow.
So this is our 23rd year. Started in 1991. With four faculty members from PCC Cascade showing four films and had 400 in attendance. And so now at our 23rd year, the festival is reaching 5,000 people a year, and we show over 20 films during the festival. So we're really excited about the longevity and the vision that the founders had from the very beginning.
And I noticed that it is free of charge. Is that right?
Absolutely. Yeah. This is the most unique thing about our festival is that all the films are brought to Portland and shown free of charge. So there's really no barrier in coming to see a film. So you don't even have to leave Portland to travel to Africa.
And how is that made possible? Do you guys have people volunteering for you or people giving you funding or...
Primarily, our festival is volunteer-led and run. So,
just like KABU.
Just like KABU, exactly. But we do have wonderful sponsors who also make this film festival possible, and the generous support of PCC Cascade. So we are really lucky to have wonderful sponsors and the vision of the founders, as well as the contributions of people who come to the festival. Donations are accepted.
Excellent. So let's get to the program. So in your description of the festival, it's noted that the films included celebrate Africa's achievements and expose Africa's failures. Is there any examples that you could give of either type of film that off the top of your head, or
Sure. We have a great film this year, Benda Bilili from the DRC.
Oh, yeah. I've seen that, actually. It's terrific.
Fabulous film. Great music. And it's definitely one of Africa's achievements. So we see people overcoming great obstacles to be successful. And now these folks are traveling the world on the festival circuit. So failures, I would say we see a lot of examples of where the government is failing the citizens of certain countries in Africa, you know, just like all over the world. We just happen to focus on one continent.
Absolutely. So your opening film I want to talk about is a historical Haitian biopic. And I understand the director will be in attendance.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Awesome.
I'm going to pick him up from the airport in just a few hours.
Wonderful. Well, welcome him to town from KBOO. How would you say a historical biopic about Haiti relates to modern audiences?
Well, first of all, a lot of people have huge gaps in their world history. And so we think it's really important for everybody to understand how important Toussaint Louverture as a person actually was in the Haitian Revolution. Also, we've got a lot of revolutionary spirit right now with people all over the world. And so I think it's something people can connect to. The film is gorgeous, and it doesn't hurt that it's a wonderful story. So,
and that is the opening night. That's
opening
tomorrow.
Night. Oh, doors open at 5:30. Hollywood Theater. Come on down, but don't be late.
You don't have
the house will pack.
Very much opportunity to get to meet Haitian film directors face to face in Portland.
Actually, Philippe Niang is French and Senegalese,
and
fine. He just happened to make a film about this great person from Africa of descent that was set in Haiti. So
wonderful. And moving on to the centerpiece film, or the proclaimed centerpiece film of the festival, that is Microphone, which is set in Alexandria, Egypt. I wanted to ask, you know, Egypt has really gotten a lot of Western news coverage ever since the Arab Spring, and there's a certain idea of the country now that I think a lot of Americans have. How is this film in step or not in step with what Americans may know about Egypt?
Well, I think the film coincides with what we see on mainstream media because it shows about people that want to be heard. And we know that people in Egypt want to be heard right now. This film focuses on artists and not the type of protests that we're hearing about in mainstream media, but rather the type of expression that's silenced in Alexandria. It's different from what we see in mainstream media because it takes place before the Arab Spring instead of right during the middle of it.
Got it. You also, it's a very documentary heavy program, which I love. I'm personally a documentary buff. You're offering both a Thursday night documentary series and Saturday documentary matinees. Why are documentaries so important to the mission of this festival, and what offerings are you most excited about?
I'm excited about all of them. Every Thursday night we have documentary films. And yes, like you said, we do have some documentaries on Saturdays this year. I think documentaries are important because it gives us a perspective from the filmmaker. A lot of people go into making a documentary and we see real stories being told. We value that.
And the last week of the festival is going to be Women Filmmakers Week. What will the highlights of this block of programming be?
Oh, we're so excited. We have two filmmakers coming, one local filmmaker who grew up right here in Portland. She's a Malian American, and she, Penda Jakite, she's coming in to show her film, Tanti. And this is a film that is about little children in Bamako, Mali. And she's made the film to raise funds for school fees for these children. We've also got Ellie Camaro coming. She's from Seattle. She's of Tanzanian heritage as well, and she is showing a film that's about going back to Tanzania and trying to make sense of how she fits into both communities, American and Tanzanian.
So, you know, looking through the program, I see at least one, if not more, firsts, which is to say, for example, films coming out of countries directed by nationals of that country for the first time ever. Are there any that you'd like to make an example of?
Gray Matter. Gray Matter is a beautiful film. It's about siblings and other people who are trying to make sense of their lives in post-genocide Rwanda. And we don't see any of the horrible war happening. We just see people today that are still trying to deal with their PTSD. And I'm really proud of that filmmaker for coming out with that film. We're very excited to show it.
Yeah, it sounds like it is something that has a lot of impact. And I hope that the attendees will appreciate the magnitude of that sort of first. So since KBOO is a community station, we're always trying to find the local angle on international issues. Why should issues of African culture matter to Portlanders?
Well, you know, we live in a global society, and so issues that are affecting folks in Africa are also affecting us here in the United States. And our mission strives to be education-oriented in addition to entertainment-oriented. And so we feel that these issues that are raised through documentaries as well as feature films are the issues that are really human issues. And that lends itself to a great conversation and discussion with the community. So by bringing the films to Portland, we also bring the directors, we also bring people from those countries to share in the after film discussion. And that's really a great opportunity for us to all dialogue on these issues, really the human condition, and to talk about them and learn from each other.
And what sort of, I'm sure that there are many stereotypes about African culture that a lot of, you know, Americans have been exposed to. What sort of stereotypes do you hope to dispel with this year's festival?
Well, you know, most of these films are made by African directors, and so the stories are told through African lenses. And that's a different perspective from the Hollywood Western view. And so by expressing their view of their country and their culture, we hope that that portrays it in a more positive light.
In a more genuine light, too, yeah.
Yeah, it is very, very comprehensive. I'm just looking at the list of films now. There are films from, you know, it looks like over 20 different countries.
Yes.
So hopefully it really provides a picture of Africa to attendees. It's very exciting. And just on an end note, I wanted to ask, I noticed that this year's festival is dedicated to Harold Williams Sr., who recently passed away, sadly. Can you tell us a little bit about his role in the community and why he's important to you or in, you know, to the festival?
Right. For over 22 years, Harold C. Williams was part of the Portland Community College Board of Directors. He was a noted community leader, not just in Portland, but, you know, people all over the metro area had a lot of respect for Harold. And we just felt that it was important for us to honor him in this way. We know that it was important for him, for African Americans, to connect to their African heritage, and we want to celebrate his life. We're going to have a special dedication where we've invited his family on closing day. We invite people to join us and find out more about this special man.
Well, hearing all of this, I feel like his memory will be more than honored by this year's festival, and I hope it is. So just quickly, before we go, where can people go for more info about the festival, the films, showtimes, and tickets?
Well, we have a website, so it's so easy. Just go to AfricanFilmFestival.org or like us on Facebook, Cascade Festival of African Films, where you can get daily updates on what's happening.
I know you all are on Facebook. So, well, Allison Mobley and Tara Foster, thank you so much again for being on the film show.
Thank you, Jen.
Best of luck with another successful year of the festival.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Coming up next is SW Concert, speaking with organizers and filmmakers with the upcoming Portland International Film Festival. Stay tuned.
You're listening to a special hour-long edition of The Film Show on KBOO. I'm S.W. Conser, here with Jen Chavez. Coming up next, we'll be talking with some filmmakers and organizers from the Portland International Film Festival. But before we do that, let's give some tickets away. There are two pairs of tickets here that are good for screenings at the Portland International Film Festival. And if you are lucky callers number 2 and 4, you can come down to KBOO and claim those tickets. I believe they're good for, yep, their voucher's good for any screening. So again, two pairs of tickets. The number to call is 503-231-8032. That's 503-231-8032. Welcome back to The Film Show on KBOO. I'm S.W. Conser, and I'm joined now by a couple of the organizers from the Portland International Film Festival. Thomas Phillipson is back in the studio. He's the Regional Service Manager for the Northwest Film Center. Thomas, welcome.
Thanks for having us.
And Nick Bruno is here. He's the PR and marketing info person at Northwest Film Center. Nick, thanks for joining us.
Great to be here.
And also, we have a return engagement from Shell White. Shell is a local filmmaker and studio person who is, his debut feature, Bucksville, was the closing film in the 2011 Northwest Filmmakers Festival. And this year, his collaboration with David Lynch is in the Shortcuts 5, the Made in Oregon program. Shell, thanks for coming in again.
Oh, thanks for having me.
So anyway, let's talk a little bit about we want to especially focus on some of the local folks who are making films out there. We'll talk about the Shortcuts 5 Made in Oregon program. But first, I'd like to ask about some of the international filmmakers that are coming to town. And there's an interesting feature that is starting off the festival. It's called Blanca Nieves. Nick, why don't you tell us about Blanca Nieves?
Well, Blanca Nieves is it's in some ways following in the steps of last year, which seemed to be the year of Snow White and Sleeping Beauty remakes. In this case, though, I think it's a far more original piece. It's a 1920s setting. It's black and white. It is silent, much like the very popular The Artist from last year. In this case, Snow White is a bullfighter, and there's flamenco rhythms peppered throughout the film, and we've got dwarves, of course, like in most Snow White films, but they are bullfighting dwarves.
Oh, my.
We're very excited. I think it's going to be a great crowd pleaser for the opening night festivities.
Are the bulls dwarves, too?
I've yet to see the
pygmy
film,
dwarves,
but
yeah.
I would encourage pygmy everyone bulls? To yeah. see the trailer. It looks exciting.
So tell us about some of the folks who are coming into Portland from overseas and from other parts of the U.S. that are going to be available to talk to the audiences who show up at the Portland International Film Festival.
Well, Conch, I can tell you that we will have visiting artists. At this point, we do not have a list of names. As soon as we know, I'm sure you'll know.
Okay, so let's talk about some of the folks who are local here. Shell, of course, is here. We're mentioning that on the 12th of February, we're going to have, there's a bunch of shorts programs here. There's experimental shorts, there's international shorts. This is the Shortcuts 5 program Made in Oregon. Joanna Priestley and Joan Gratz, who have been on the show before, will be represented, as well as Orlin Nutt and James Lowry. So a lot of amazing Portland filmmakers. And short films, you know, short films are a little bit underrepresented. What do you folks think about Portland's a great incubator for that.
I think they may be underappreciated, short films. And I think a lot of people just don't know they exist. And some people think that they're just like a resume film and don't really take them seriously. But they really are an art form. And, you know, I've made shorts for about 25 years. And it really is a great way to explore ideas and to really, you know, make your own choices, creative choices.
Yeah, speaking of 25 years ago, I'm old enough to remember back in the 80s when cable channels were showing short films And European TV still shows short films mm-hmm. oftentimes, but it's really not so much a TV thing anymore. But Shell, you have worked actually this short film that you're doing, Bird of Paradise. I'm sorry, did I get there?
Bird of Flames.
Excuse me. Yeah. Bird of Flames is a collaboration with David Lynch, who also has worked in both TV and films.
Yeah. Right. I would say it's a loose collaboration. Officially, it's a music video for David Lynch and a singer that he works with named Krista Bell, who's a very good singer. And, you know, the project came about, a producer contacted me and said, "Hey, Shell, we're doing some projects with David Lynch. He's doing a lot of music now. And would you be interested in directing a music video?" And I think it took me about 1.4 seconds to say yes, being a David Lynch fan. So they sent me the song. And the first line of lyrics, "coming into a dark world, love is a bird of flames," just set my imagination going and thinking of a lot of things. But I kind of think about it like an experimental short film even more than a music video, because I really was left to my own devices and had pretty much, pardon me, full creative control in a way that you would on a short film.
Now, David Lynch is sort of known as having the Northwest sensibility in a lot of his film and TV work. I believe he's just been in L.A. for a lot of time. Did you get a chance to actually work closely with him, or did you just sort of work from his notes?
No. The way it worked is I worked with Krista Bell, who's the singer, and he basically he had seen one of my music videos and one of my films, and he pretty much gave me carte blanche to do. You know, I wrote a treatment, but he signed off. You know, he bankrolled the video. And but it was a very, very, very low budget thing. But anyway, yeah, he kind of gave it his blessing. And then Krista Bell, I worked directly with her and a producer, and came up with this thing that very much came from this place that I call 4 o'clock in the morning ideas that are a combination between the subconscious and conscious sort of thinking, which I love to go there for my personal work. And so a lot of images came from there. But, you know, another interesting thing about the song itself is that it's divided into two halves. The first half is David Lynch speaking the lyrics in kind of a spooky, dark voice. And then the second half is like this perfect balance to that, where Krista Bell is singing and her voice is smooth and beautiful and almost angelic. And so I knew the video needed to have that sort of diptych quality to it. And so I got thinking about where would this take place, and I hit upon a kind of a smoky nightclub, just sort of a place that you wanted to be and just had this mystery to it and this atmosphere, and that there would be these people watching a performance, and the performance started with this sort of dark male energy that corresponded with the David Lynch lyrics vocal. And I had this dancer friend, Mintron, who performed this really interesting, great sort of, he was like a spider moving and angular and twitchy. And then he does this sort of, he's like a wizard. And then out of this cocoon comes Krista Bell, and it's like the birth of Venus, and she's beautiful and round and all that, and the light changes, and there's all this sort of sparkliness. You know, it's that part of it is kind of about the power of feminine beauty. And I think that and just the sort of maybe obsessive nature of romantic love is what it's about. But I think it is pretty surreal, you know, it kind of wraps together how a lot of ideas blend together in dreams, and I think it captures that sense of the subconscious.
Right. Having seen the film, I can tell that you brought a lot of your animation techniques and sensibility mm-hmm. to bear on that. There's a lot of camera work that really augments the rhythm and the dream state that's going on. And certainly you've worked with Gus Van Sant. You've worked with a lot of people in integrating a lot of filmmakers in integrating animated sequences, special effects sequences into especially dreamlike sequences inside feature films, mm-hmm. but also you've had, you know, this animation background and you're and a music background. You were a composer. People who remember Live from Off Center might remember some of your compositions as well. So you have this really broad range that kind of loops through all of these. And I think this will be apparent for people who see Bird of Flames mm-hmm. to see all of these influences.
Yeah, I think it's one of the things that I could relate to and appreciated about David Lynch is that he does do a lot of his own music, and that's always been something that appealed to me. Not that I don't enjoy working with musicians, but there's something about creating something that then kind of inspires images that then goes back to accompanying the music. And so this sort of loop of being able to really have a full idea that combines both audio and image, there's something very appealing about that.
You know, I think there seems to be sort of an 80s theme running through here, and I'm just remembering when I was younger and Night Flight was on mm-hmm. the TV, and all of these amazing Portland animators were being represented. The aforementioned Joan Gratz, Rose Bond, Jim Blashfield. And when I came out to Portland, I found out that there was this scene that was very collaborative and interactive. In fact, you and Joan Gratz and Jim Blashfield collaborated on an event with the Oregon Symphony at one point, which was pretty right. impressive, an animation screening.
Right, right. Yeah, that was quite an event. Yeah, there were four of us, and we were each given a choice of some, you know, piece of music from the repertoire. And I picked Gustav Holst's Neptune, which is very ethereal. But yeah, it was probably the best soundtrack I've ever had to a film, which was a full orchestra with a 50 woman choir.
And to see it performed live was pretty amazing.
Yeah, it really was.
So that's the kind of events that you often see here in town, and I think it's only now that it's coming to be appreciated around the country, actually around the world, that there's this cultural scene here. So let's talk more about some of the local artists who will be at the film festival. One of them, this is a long-awaited feature. This has been brewing for a very long time. It's a documentary called Alien Boy, The Death and Life of James Chassis. And Brian Lindstrom, local filmmaker, has been doing this film, has been working on this film for quite a while. It's finally going to be at the Cinema 21 during the festival on the 15th of February. And later in the month, it'll have a week-long run. Tom and Nick, why don't you tell us about this this upcoming feature? Actually, I understand that Brian Lindstrom is in Guatemala right now, so he can't join us.
That's right.
He
wanted to be here when I was looking for other filmmakers to be on here, contact him, and he was at the Dallas airport on his way to Guatemala and said, boy, I should love to be there, talk about it, but do it justice, so... Nick, you want to talk a little bit about the film? Or?
Yeah, I can talk a little bit about the
film. So Alien Boy, The Death and Life of James Chassis.
So obviously the story of James Chassis is something ripped from the headlines, a very local, very strongly felt issue within Portland. And Brian's films, I find, are always very much keyed in on issues of social justice. And he's very much a cinema verite director. In this case, I feel he's branched out a little bit and made a film that relies a bit more on talking heads. However, its story is so strong and felt, and his passion is clear throughout.
Well, a previous feature of his was Finding Normal, which on one level was talking heads, but it was just amazing stories from people who had been through... just terrible experiences on the streets and
yes.
come through.
He really knows how to get the most out of his talking heads.
He absolutely
sure.
does. He's you feel such intimacy with his subjects. Mm-hmm. And I've seen a preview version of Alien Boy, and I'm going to tell you that audiences will not be disappointed. It was worth the 6 years that went into making it. And personally, I think Brian is just a dear. I had him as an instructor at the Northwest Film Center. I took his documentary film class. And so this is a great moment for us as an organization to be able to highlight his work. It's, for me, one of the highlights of the festival.
So the 15th of February is, that is going to be Alien Boy, The Death and Life of James Chassie. You can check it. What is the easiest way for people to get tickets? There's a couple of ways. People can go to the Portland Art Museum is one way.
Yes, at the Portland Art Museum in the lobby of the Mark Building is where our CBO, our community box office, is. And we're open from 12 to 6 p.m. every day from a couple days ago through the end of the festival. Another option is to buy your tickets online. We have a PIF micro site up right now, and I would refer everyone to northwestfilm.org. You'll easily find the PIF micro site from there.
Yeah, and then if you're going to think you're going to see a lot of these films, we of course encourage you to be a Silver Screen member and get a membership, and you can see them all.
And that's through the Northwest Film Center.
Exactly.
NWfilm.org.
Yes.
And I'd like to mention that Brian's film is actually going to be highlighted in a program that we're doing in conjunction with high school classes.
Oh, really?
It's called a Global Classroom. We've done it in prior years.
Yes.
And in this year, what we're doing is we're curating five films from the festival lineup. We're encouraging teachers to bring their classrooms, to sign up their classrooms for this. It's high school students. And we're providing study guides, accompanying articles and other materials. And it's meant to engage the students with the material and then to be able to bring that into the classroom for further discussion. We like to say that it's a way to introduce youth culture to world culture.
Okay, so let's see, rounding out. Okay, we've got documentary, we've got the opening night feature, which is a sort of a fairy tale, Blancanieves. We've got music videos, one from Shel White. And we also have, we have an experimental feature that's made in Scotland, and that's going to be something that Cinema Project is bringing to the Cinemagic. And this is 2 Years at Sea, featured by Ben Rivers. Very atmospheric, I understand. And this is going to be playing there a couple of shows, the 17th and the 20th of February.
Yes. I'm sure most of your listeners are really familiar with Cinema Project and the great work that they do. They're a nonprofit. They run experimental showcases and bring filmmakers to town throughout the year. I'm a huge supporter of them personally. I blog about them regularly. I do not know too much about 2 Years at Sea other than it's black and white, very very much wordless, and I'm sure fascinating since they brought it to us.
Set in a forest. It sounds very much like Winter in the Northwest from what I've heard of it. But these are generally non-narrative films, but one that puts you in a space that's kind of outside the everyday. And Cinema Project is really well. And they choose, in my experience, they've done shorts programs in the past, and they've always been riveting.
Well put.
Yes. So what other highlights are happening at the Portland International Film Festival that people should watch out for? It's just about to get going, and we should, I've seen the schedules around town, and they're also online.
Yes. Well, we open, as we said, on the 7th, and then on the 8th, we start rolling out the films in earnest. We have 136 films this year, 93 features, 43 shorts, and they're from 44 different countries. So I'll hit up a few of those.
Most of them show twice.
Most of them do.
And you've got some events as well that are pretty exciting.
Well, there's always the opening night, which includes the opening night party, which will happen at the Newmark Theater, PCPA's Newmark Theater. I would say that a lot of folks will probably be interested in, there's a new Werner Herzog film. Yeah, it's called Happy People, You're in the Taiga, and I've seen it. What he did was he took a four-hour Russian documentary and turned it into about a 90-plus minute feature of his own, and he narrates it.
It's quite interesting. Not necessarily the same thematic. You're not staying in the same theme as the original, I'm assuming.
Well, he certainly brings his own concerns to it, as he often does.
Well, those who've seen, I'm trying to remember the 3D feature. Best use of 3D I've ever seen, the documentary
Cave of Forgotten Dreams,
set in the ancient caves on the edge of France. And so Werner Herzog is going to be here. Werner Herzog is not going to be here, but his film is going to be here.
And, we did invite him, by the way.
And
I think we invite him every time we have one of his films.
I think
films.
It's been almost 20 years since I saw him here in town. But he was, I mean, that was a night to remember for sure.
Sure.
And we know that some filmmakers are going to be here in attendance. So people should keep checking in every so often and maybe at nwfilm.org/festivals, is that right?
Yes, and we also have a newsroom blog that is easily accessible via the nwfilm.org address, and we'll be doing a lot of festival updates there and through our Twitter feed as well.
Well, you know, once again, thank you, Thomas Phillipson and Nick Bruno, for coming in as well, talking about the Portland International Film Festival. And Shel White, always a pleasure to have you here. Bird of Flames is going to be part of the Shortcuts 5 Made in Oregon screening. That's on the 12th. We have many local folks. Let's see. Anything else that we should know? That anything in the future for Oregon filmmaking that's going to be really exciting that people should know about? I think we have certainly Portlandia is like the big talk these days. There's just a whole lot of local production going on. And
definitely.
And
we are at the Film Center working on a. We're really excited about this Project Viewfinder thing that we're doing. We did a lot of fundraising for it, and it's taking 12 homeless youths and teaching them how to express themselves through film. So that's something. There's a buzz around the Film Center definitely right now that we're all excited about.
The program just began this week, so it's a very exciting moment for us.
Well, thanks again. It was great to have you all in. And we'd also like to thank, as always, the Oregon Media Production Association for their support and collaboration. And thanks to all the listeners on the radio dial and on the web. Oh, I want to let you know that this is the music that David Lynch wrote for Bird of Flames, the Shel White short film that we're going out on. And I want to let you also know that the audio for this show will be available later today on our archive page, kboo.fm/thefilmshow.
And stay tuned now for an afternoon of music on your homegrown Portland radio station.
And now, the KBOO News at Noon. A former employee of Portland Public Schools has filed a lawsuit against the district, alleging that she was forced to resign because of the behavior of school officials. The employee, who was an occupational therapist working with disabled students, claims that she was overworked and told by school officials to only work with those students whose parents seemed likely to sue. She also says her job was threatened when she told administrators about a teacher screaming at a kid with autism and teachers leaving classrooms of special needs students unattended. The Portland City Council is holding a hearing this afternoon at 2 o'clock to hear from the public on the issue of paid sick leave. Andrea Peluso is with the Everybody Benefits Coalition, which is pushing the initiative.
Widely, 41% of private sector workers in and around Portland don't have access to paid sick days. We know nationally that 8 out of 10 of our lowest wage workers don't have access to paid sick days on the job. So the folks who are least likely to go a day to be able to go a day without pay, without risking being able to pay rent or other bills at the end of the month, those folks are least likely also to have access to paid sick time on the job. And industry-wise, you know, we're in Portland, we see 8 out of 10 food service workers don't have access to paid sick days. So it is restaurant workers, other food service workers, child care workers, home health care workers. A lot of folks who have direct and ongoing contact with the public are working sick when they don't have paid time off to be able to stay home.
That was Andrea Peluso. The coalition's webpage is at everybodybenefitspdx.org. The council hearing is this afternoon at 2. A pair of consumer advocacy organizations are calling out Whole Foods and United Natural Foods Incorporated regarding labor violations. The International Labor Rights Forum has launched an investigation into the violations, which include threatening California workers who tried to form a union and firing warehouse workers in Auburn, Washington, who went on strike. The third earthquake in 2 weeks was reported this morning in Amboy, Washington, north of Portland. The U.S. Geological Survey reported the earthquake had a 3.7 magnitude. That's the KBOO headline news at noon. For more local, national, and international news, tune in every weekday at 5 for the KBOO Evening News, produced by volunteer reporters right here in our Portland studio.
This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Hopworks Urban Brewery, committed to creating world-class food and organic beer as sustainably as possible at our carbon-neutral eco-brew pubs. Hopworks is located at Southeast 29th and Powell Boulevard, and Hopworks Bike Bar is at North Williams and Shaver, available on draft and in bottles throughout Cascadia. Information at 503-232-HOPS or hopworksbeer.com. Shocks of Sheba has also been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from the Garden Spout, specializing in indoor gardening equipment, including horticultural lighting, environmental control, hydroponic and organic nutrients, and pest control. The Garden Spout is located at 4532 Southeast 63rd, just south of Foster in Portland. Information at 503-788-GROW. Welcome to Shocks of Sheba.